Well, good afternoon, and thank you all for coming. I'm Saul Golden, and I'd like to thank Raise and the Assembly for inviting me today to take part in this this diverse panel. I guess in difference to some of my colleagues, I am, laying my cards out, I'm an architect by practice, architect and urban designer, and I've been working and teaching in Northern Ireland since about 2002, increasingly getting into areas of research through with my colleagues who couldn't join us today, but with colleagues at the Urban Research Lab through the University of Ulster and the Built Environment Research Institute, looking at ways to improve on sustainable and inclusive development across Northern Ireland, looking at how to improve the capacity across all levels to help support and deliver those types of development and planning, and also the responsibilities that professionals and political leaders alike have to engage better with the public and to help create policies and best practice to help deliver and support kind of future growth in the right directions. So today, the briefing I'm going to give is called A Fresh Look at Community Engagement and Regeneration, and it is about best practice or better practice and innovative policy in Northern Ireland. I'm going to present on research that I've been involved with colleagues since about 2012, and although we've been working across Northern Ireland, I'm going to talk a bit more about some of the projects and research deriving from involvement around Belfast, but it is more transferable beyond that. And my interest is really in policies and developments that connect Northern Ireland to more international aspects and challenges that urban and even rural development face. So I'm going to focus on the perceived shortcomings in public engagement, focusing on local and neighborhood consultation processes for many major public and private regeneration projects that fall within the Assembly's remits through the Executive Office and ministerial departments, including infrastructure, economy, and communities. I was looking at the statutory consultation requirements under recent planning changes and arguing that public engagement objectives that were set out in the Fresh Start Agreement remain relevant to current policy and are worthy of re-examining and making sure that they actually find their way into practice. I'm going to try this. So there we are. So the context of what I'm here to discuss is a perceived issue with public and private development processes, especially the larger projects, that a lack of effective public engagement can result in perceptions, especially at a public level, of predetermined outcomes and less effective levels of consultation. I'll be looking at case studies where my colleagues and I have been involved with more public-focused events, not running counter to, but in parallel to planning applications for major planning developments and in response to some of these major regeneration proposals. Along with the case studies out in the field, we led a symposium where we were joined by local communities and members of statutory agencies from Department of Infrastructure to the Ulster Architectural Heritage Society, PLACE, the Ministerial Advisory Group, and others. And the focus of what we're trying to discuss today is low cost and more incremental and locally based events that we believe can more actively engage with communities and in return can help gather and gain better quality data to inform decisions. The methods, along with discussing some of the work out in the field, is to look at surveys that we led and questionnaires with participants and with professionals and developers. And we hope that we'll be able to contribute to developments of planning policy and practice that will be able to achieve more effective and grounded engagement strategies and outcomes for delivery. We sort of began with this hopefully well-known model of participation by Arnstein. It's been around since the late 60s, with the understanding that no matter where development comes from, where planning and regeneration, whether it's from the private sector or whether it's public and government-led or whether it's community-led events, that there's a very complex array of stakeholders and what you might call the loose term of communities that help shape the decisions on buildings and spaces, especially spaces that were public or become privatized or a mixture of both, and how those affect the social, cultural, economic character of neighborhoods. There's a lot of research that has gone on since the mid-90s and about the impact of larger regeneration projects can have a massive investment in buildings, but can actually have very little impact on local people. And we're trying to help find a model which is somewhere between a closer to a partnership approach rather than looking at total citizen control or other models which are more considered more top-down. The background is for our research here is the changes in planning policy that took place in 2015. And just to make sure you're reading your briefing packets properly, this is the corrected the date. It says June 2016 on your packets, but it's actually from July 2015 that all major new planning applications have to go through a statutory process and provide evidence that they've held a consultation process. Of the two main pieces of evidence that has to be shown are that there's been at least one public event in the locality in which the proposed development is taking place, where the public and other stakeholders might make comments, but also that they have to publish in a newspaper in the locality about the proposed development with information that includes where the events take place, the type and scale of the development, and information that the comments gathered are actually not for the planning application, they are for the developer or the developer vehicle or the department itself. Unique in Northern Ireland, the council set out much of this role for public engagement, but the regeneration powers, which were set to be devolved out to the 11 new councils, still remain within the Department of Communities and therefore affect at a more strategic and regional level quite a lot of projects which affect the funding and development of the built environment. Now, going back to what I mentioned about the fresh start, why we think this is something still relevant, even though it never really had a chance to get off the ground after it was launched in late 2015, is that it was an agreement or launched by the executive and the UK and Irish governments. It was meant to be a far-reaching and comprehensive framework to address many of the challenging and intractable issues, whether they be ethno or sectarian, or just issues of marginalization of young people and older people across Northern Ireland. Included within that agreement was draft guidelines for the good practice and consultation, which included these three objectives: to enhance decision-making, to improve the acceptability of decisions reached, and to build capacity internally and externally for improved relationships and stakeholder input. Now, these measures were to improve foreign and direct investment, but also to protect public services and to help widen the engagement of across all communities, and to also support the growth and sustainability of local indigenous businesses. So from our research within Northern Ireland, the UK, and across Europe, what we've kind of, this diagram is an example of the top level being what we consider more sustainable and inclusive and therefore successful development. In terms of their constituents, their stakeholders are made up of the widest range of workers, of residents, of shoppers, and even tourists. The management of those developments are shared across community, public government, and private, and that their use is more open, maintained as public as possible, with as diverse a range of uses, as opposed to at the bottom left, a much more restricted vehicle that delivers and controls and privatizes. So our argument is that in comparison to these successful spaces, consultation processes should also try to be as equally inclusive and broad in order to gain the most effective data, the most effective knowledge. I said, while we've been working in rural and urban communities across Northern Ireland, the research where we were a bit more systematic about was projects across North, South, East, and West Belfast in the inner city affecting rural and periphery communities and neighborhoods. What we're trying to do is learn lessons from some of the failed proposals, failed projects. This is an example of the city centre in Belfast. It's been called the Inner North, Smithfield and Union, the Library Press Quarter, many different names. And over the last 10 to 15 years, it's had many different master plans, many different consultants, many different projects proposed, all of varying varying options in how to deal with the existing building fabric, with the streets, with diversity of uses. None of them have come to fruition. And so there's been quite a lot of money spent time and time and again to bring in and collect data and collect views. And the most recent one in 2016, which was a £300 million proposal, collapsed when the developer didn't submit information. But also that was mainly driven by a lack of engagement with the community and their view that the plan should be thrown out and all stakeholders called back rather than kind of a small panel of stakeholders. And processes like this tend to result in consultation fatigue. So you get less and less effective engagement from communities, from businesses who continue to give of their time and don't see, as my colleague Gillian mentioned there, they don't see the results of what their data is actually going towards. So what we have been trying to do is look at some international case studies and examples of what we call active engines, a more active out in the field, that can be a combination of events, of occupations of spaces to help experiment and to help show how spaces might be used. They're low cost before major investment is made, and we try to target them as open-ended processes rather than coming in with designs and kind of glossy models or visualizations. And the idea is based on a concept called triangulation, which is from an American economist and urbanist named William White, that if you can create, bring public and people together in a space and add an element, an activity, an event, an object, something, you can foster conversations between strangers that might not normally happen. This happens quite often on culture nights and things like that. So we tried to approach it through a social and community engagement approach where collecting data became a byproduct rather than standing in front of people with clipboards in the street. Some of the methods that we used are based on international precedents. Place mapping is developed by a Project for Public Spaces. Occupations and exhibits have been used across the UK and Europe by arts and organizations to both occupy spaces in a positive way, not in a negative way, to allow people to share their views rather than on a form or on a survey, and to feel that they are perhaps part of something before ideas have been solidified. These can also include briefing events, which can help to set the groundwork for departments and for policy and for developers. And the Royal Institute of British Architects, for example, has it's called a briefing game in which you can use so that they're not as not sort of loosely bringing people together. They are semi-structured events, but they are trying to go out into the community rather than waiting for communities to come to staged events or staged exhibitions. What these events also try to do is use the publicity and social media in a way that isn't just to promote or state the date of an event, but to, again, keep this idea of conversations and collecting data across all ranges of platforms that are possible. And what we found is that, in some instances, our almost no-cost or very low-cost events, which were supported by local volunteers, by organizations, by businesses, and were attended by some developers and Department of Communities representatives, in some instances, we were returning 30% of all the comments that were received in terms of the consultation over a three-month period under the normal statutory kind of processes. And because we were getting that high of a return, we sort of felt, well, maybe there is some value in what we're doing. And we established a set of surveys with participants, but also sending them out to members of the planning and design professionals through the RTPI, the Royal Town Planning Institute, the RSUA, the Ulster Architects Society, representatives of the statutory and voluntary organizations from the Heritage Society to place to the Ministerial Advisory Group, Departments of Community and SIB and so forth, and also trying to bridge age barriers by bringing in students from Ulster University and Queen's University and FE colleges, and as many local businesses in each area as we could get returns on. Our aim was a more qualitative, to try to understand what the involvement that people had, what was their experience in consultation and project proposals, what were their sources of information about each of those developments, where did they find or what was the quality of information they were getting, what were their reasons for responding or not responding to these traditional processes, and what priorities did they feel were maybe being missed or were being overlooked in traditional processes that they wanted to bring to light. We also asked about what were their perceptions about these more informal events and more art-based exhibitions, and their comments on the statutory consultations and the quality of the public realm in general. In terms of the scope of the briefing today, I give an overview of the responses and the actions that we proposed to come from that. Maybe not surprising as well, there was a clear lack of engagement and an awareness, really, which was the issue of how to access information and feedback amongst the public through the traditional processes. Even if you are know how to use computers and the internet, to actually sometimes to find information about development, about planning decisions, and about previous consultations can be quite daunting. So there was a feeling by actually going out and trying to do demonstrations and events and talk to people that could become and that is possible to be a viable and also economically efficient way for the public to be able to contribute at a more strategic level, as meaning not as just a commentary on advanced stage proposals at which it's usually too late to really have an impact. The questionnaires and the feedback we received also highlighted at the bottom quite a range of priorities and themes that would apply to major planning projects and regeneration that policy and best practice could take into account, ranging from on the left-hand side more social priorities for the types of uses and access and the input and the levels of input for the public, to more design considerations, the type of infrastructure and wider implications, to the management, how developments would be maintained and managed and who would be responsible once they were completed, to how they would be furnished and more kind of specific economic costs and the returns that communities and employers and employees might be expected to deliver. Some of the further findings were that the less formal events certainly, as I mentioned, could be more effective when they are used at earlier stages rather than at advanced stages. That there were members of the public certainly expressed a feeling that if they shared negative information almost at any stage, that they could be hurting or thwarting any investment. So the traditional processes have a danger that the data they're collecting can be skewed, because there's a fear that, well, we want something to happen here, so you're not getting the correct data. The idea of the expert trap, not appearing to be approaching members of the public as if you are experts, or as that was seen as a way of alienating lay people and cutting off these opportunities to have deeper conversations and getting better data. So the idea of the community was also something you don't really know, especially particularly in Northern Ireland, who is and who speaks for communities. And the more informal events allowed a wider range of conversations, so you don't always know who the right people might be. But that these earlier engagement processes were seen to be a way to build a better and effective starting process rather than coming in and asking for buy-in to things which are already decided. And that in these cases that any consultation should have a greater emphasis on strategies rather than on computer visualizations. So some of the concluding thoughts and some of the actions that we were recommending. So we feel that we can learn from good management techniques and from inclusive design places in order to enhance how data is collected and how the outcomes of major projects can have a better economic, social, and environmental impacts on the wider community in Northern Ireland. To address current and perceived failings, it is our view that future policy reviews should really consider the extent of evidence, and rather than the evidence of having static exhibitions about designs and proposals already completed, but should really focus on evidence of earlier stage and strategic consultation. And to help avoid issues of consultation fatigue and the aborted capital, which is invested both in the social aspects of people, but also the financial outlay for departments and investors, the best practice should promote a wider use of inclusive data and also develop in parallel a better process of evaluating the type and the quality of data received. So in conclusion, that where clients, communities, and statutory organizations can more jointly articulate their planning design and aspirations through a more interactive process, the result in terms of data and policy decisions can be an improved local buy-in, improved decision-making capacity, and, as we hope, the implementation of the Fresh Start objectives more effectively. Thank you.